The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Let me wax philosophical for just a moment. When you love something, you want to take care of it. You want to do right by it. You want to make sure it's safe and healthy and happy and prosperous. So people that love America want to do right by it. They want to make sure it's safe and healthy and happy and prosperous from inside and from the outside. That's why national security is important. That's why domestic security is important. We've got a crisis at the southern border, and I would say it's creeping to the northern border as well. I don't know if it's at the same crisis level, but there's a group of young men, a couple of young guys, who wanted to really document for you what's happening. And why did they want to do this? Because they love America. But what they did was so exceptionally dangerous that it really does demonstrate a devotion to this country and to the cause that they believe in, which is, look what's happening at the southern border. It is not safe. It is not fair. It is not good. It is not healthy. It is not right. And many, many people are extremely frustrated and outraged by it. But are they willing to fly to Ecuador and make the whole journey and document it so that you can actually see what is happening? These guys put their lives on the line, and it's an amazing story. You can hear all about them and see all their work at muckraker.com. But the founder is joining us next.
Welcome to the Michelle Tafoya podcast.
You know, after a long day, no one wants to spend an hour in the kitchen making dinner. Well, how about quick and easy barbecue? No, I'm not talking about takeout. I'm talking juicy steaks, succulent chicken or fish, and healthy grilled veggies cooked on your own Solaire infrared gas grill. Solaire grills are the hot, fast grills that heat up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes, even in the dead of winter. True. And that heat locks in juices and flavor and grills your food faster. It's a veteran-owned company, multi-generational family business, and each Solaire grill is made in the USA out of quality commercial-grade stainless steel. It will be the last grill you ever need to buy. Visit besthotgrill.com for their free guide, How to Choose the Right Infrared Grill. For apartment balconies to backyard entertainment areas, that's besthotgrill.com. With a hot, fast Solaire infrared gas grill, you'll want to grill every single day. Get your free guide at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com. Anthony Rubin, welcome. It's a pleasure to meet you. I was fascinated when I saw one of your reports on this trek that these illegal migrants are taking up to the United States. What made you want to do this and pursue this story?
Bottom line is that it hadn't been done before, you know, at least the way I wanted to see it done. You know, people had done bits and pieces of it. People had done, for example, the Darien Gap route, just that alone. People have done that very well. People had done the Train of Death. Nobody had actually done the whole thing, actually flown into Ecuador and done the entire route with these people and documented it. And so that's what I wanted to show. And as far as I am aware, we were the first journalist to ever actually embed and do the entire thing with them.
So when you had the vision of doing this, there are a lot of places that people come from to try to cross the southern border into the United States. Why did you pick Ecuador?
Because that is where that's the starting point. That's what a lot of people are not aware of. That's where the entire world, unless you're already from South America, like if you're a Venezuelan or a Colombian, I suppose that doesn't apply to you. But, you know, if you're one of these Chinese people that's coming up here, they all fly into Ecuador because that has some of the world's easiest entry requirements. You could fly in there, no questions asked, and then they start trekking through. So that is the starting point. A lot of people are not aware of that.
I certainly wasn't until I started following you and your work. And forget, Jersey's very interested. My dog is quite interested in this as well. So you go to Ecuador, and how do you discover exactly what steps to take? I mean, how did you know when and where? This is a foreign country. How did you know what to do?
Well, okay. Well, so we went there with one clue, and that clue was when I had, a few months earlier, I had gone down to the Darien Gap, not actually like deep into the jungle, but into these Panamanian refugee camps with Michael Yan, who I'm sure you're well aware of. And when I was there, I met this Chinese man and we stayed in touch when he got into the United States. And, you know, I continued to speak with him. And then one day he just sends me this PDF document. He's like, hey, by the way, maybe this will interest you. And it was all in Chinese. And so I had it translated and I'm reading the translation. And it's basically an instruction manual on how to get from Quito, Ecuador to the U.S. border. And then that's like the first maybe third of it. And then the second two thirds are basically how to work the asylum system and be able to claim refugee status and stay in the United States. And so we were basing this off of that document. So it says go to Quito, Ecuador, then go to this border town called Tulcan. And that is right on the border of Colombia. And at this town, it's the town, when you get there, they hand out maps of the town. And these maps have, it shows every single organization that's there that helps these so-called migrants to keep trekking through. I mean, there must be 20 or 30, maybe even 40 organizations. I could supply you guys with the map. I don't know how many organizations exactly are there, but they hand out literally maps of town. It's like, go to this organization. They go to that organization. It's like a treasure map. And so we had this information based off of that blueprint. Then otherwise, once you're on the ground, we were just talking to people. And once you're on the ground and you're asking people, you know, where are these so-called migrants going? And I don't really like using that word because they're not migrants, but you ask them, like, hey, where are these migrantes at? It's not very difficult. And you know, one place leads to the next, and it's very easy to find your way around and see where these people are going.
How much money has to be handed out? How many palms do you have to grease? I have to believe this is a money-making opportunity for those who are helping all these people.
Yeah, 100%. It's I can only speak to certain parts because, for example, crossing – well, actually – for example, the land crossing from Ecuador into Colombia, we did that totally legally. I know that other people will cross, they'll, you know, cross over some hills from Ecuador into Colombia where, of course, you can get robbed or you probably have to pay people to actually be able to cross. We didn't do anything like that. So I didn't, well, we did do stuff like that in other crossing points. So I'm not sure entirely, but I could give you just an idea. Like to get from Guatemala into Mexico, for example, we crossed from Tucumán, Guatemala into Tapachula, Mexico, that cost us around $125 a head. And they're just doing that all day. You show up at the border, just all day long. There's giant groups of people coming through. You can imagine they're just milking this. To get through the Darien Gap, we had to pay these guides $100 a head to get into the jungle. And then, of course, when you're going to cross into the United States, the cartel charges, depending on the group. I mean, if you're talking Chinese, they'll charge them thousands of dollars per head to cross into the U.S. So it all depends. But yeah, I mean, these people are milking it for sure.
You were able to get so much of this, all of this on camera. Did you find any resistance from people who you wanted to talk to or people who thought this isn't probably a good idea for us to be on camera?
Yeah, for sure. The South Americans, you know, or basically a lot of the Latinos are always pretty cool with being on camera. They're like, hey, yeah, let's go on camera. And they, you know, make a show out of it. But the Chinese are not cool with it, generally speaking. There was a group of Syrian men. They all claimed to be from Syria, at least. And I saw one of their passports. They showed me off camera. You could see them in the documentary. I put the camera on them and they get pissed. They're like, no, like, stop filming me. They're wearing hats. They pull the hats over their face. Honestly, I would say other than the Latinos, a lot of people are very camera shy, to put it lightly.
This seems to me to have taken a lot of guts for you to do this. How often did you fear for your safety or even your life?
I would say multiple times for sure. I'll give you a couple examples. One of them is this port town called Nacocli. That's like right before you enter the Darien Gap. It's a human smuggling town. You take a bus to this town and people could look at where it's at in the map. Basically, there's Nacocli, and then from Nacocli you get onto boats and they take you to different Darien Gap entry points. Okay. And you get off the bus at this town of Nacocli, a very, very poor place. There's not much going on. I mean, it's a sizable town, but you know, there's not much going on there other than the fact that it's a port town. And you know, as soon as you get off the bus, you got people coming up to you that are human smugglers trying to sell you their package to get you through the jungle. And we were going around in this town. And of course, we talked to the police. The police had told us, be very careful taking your camera in this town. I mean, there's criminals everywhere. But there was an area where we're at the docks where these people are getting loaded onto boats and we're filming. And I'm well aware of the dangers, of course. I'm not like naive to what I'm doing. But you just start to see these men that are giving you the most nasty looks you can imagine. You see them out in the distance. They're pointing at us, whispering about us. And these are clearly human smugglers. And it got, and I, you know, my brother and I just, once we started to feel that there were, you know, tens of eyeballs on us, we just got the hell out of there. That was the first part where we started to feel our lives were in danger. And then, of course, when we're in the Darien Gap, I could tell you stories from there. And then, I mean, when we got smuggled into Mexico by I believe it was the Sinaloa cartel, when we got loaded onto the train of death by these guys who were literally dressed like ninjas, full body armor. They were totally blacked out with you know, face coverings. We could only see their eyes. I mean, they looked like ninjas. They literally had swords tucked in their back behind their body armor. They were all carrying guns. I later find out that the swords are for if they want to kill you, they don't want to make any noise. That's why they carry the swords. And then, you know, we got picked up by the Gulf cartel before we were about to cross into the United States, and they smashed all our equipment. So, yeah, I mean, it's a life-threatening journey for sure.
So when they smashed all your equipment, what did you end up with? I mean, what did you do?
You mean as far as our footage goes?
Yeah.
Well, we had, before we crossed into Mexico, I was pretty well aware that Mexico was going to be a very dangerous part of the journey, if not the most dangerous. So we actually shipped all of our footage, but rather I had a friend who I met in Guatemala who took it all the footage up until that point back to the US. And then what happened was the cartel made off with all of our Mexico footage, other than the footage that we captured on this little GoPro camera, which they didn't find because it was buried in some weird compartment in this backpack that they didn't think to look in. So we actually, interestingly enough, we have some of our best Mexican footage they didn't get, like the footage of us getting smuggled into Mexico, something I would never do again. If they made off that footage, that was just gone because I would never do that again. The footage of us boarding the train of death, and then the last moments before we got picked up by these guys, we're about to start walking down this beach. We maintained all of that footage, but all the other footage we had, which was actually some very incredible stuff, it wasn't backed up and they made off with it. And we actually had to, after we were done with this, we went back to the United States. We took, you know, about 2 weeks. We got all the same gear and then we flew back into Mexico, caught up with the same caravan again, and we rode the train of death again for a second time to make this documentary happen.
Wow. Again, you said you wanted to do it because it hadn't been done. But there's got to be, what is it about this story that moves you to expose it to this extent?
I think it's probably the most important story. How do I put this? It's certainly one of the most important stories concerning the United States right now. I mean, it's an invasion of our country. Let's not call it anything other than that. It is an invasion. Look up the definition of an invasion. It fits the definition perfectly. But also, it's something that you can film, right? Like, for example, another incredible story, something that's going to unfold, is going to be a sovereign debt crisis, the likes of which this country or the world has really never seen. It's going to be a spectacular collapse of the United States dollar eventually. You know, we're facing $33 trillion in debt, hundreds of trillions of unfunded liabilities, right? But you can't, how do you film that, right? That's more of analyzing numbers and anticipating what's going to come. This is an incredible story. It's an invasion, but you could also go out and actually film this and show people hardcore video evidence that moves people. So for those types of, and there's other stories you could think of as well, but this in particular, it's a combination of factors that make it something incredible to go after, I think.
So the word muckraker, I was looking into this because I remember hearing about yellow journalism when I was studying and muckrakers and who they were and how the term started off as derogatory, but then you own it. It's like, no, we're the ones dredging up the real stuff and bringing it to light. Again, these are important stories, but not everyone's willing to do them. And certainly not everyone's willing to take the risk. What kind of feedback are you getting? Why aren't more people just jumping on you and saying, can we use this? Can we use you?
Well, actually, we did. There was some serious people in Washington, D.C. that got in touch with that we're talking to now. I'm not saying who it is just because they asked that we keep it on the down low. But, you know, there's people that reached out after this. You know, at first I was like, man, because it wasn't really getting any traction. And then eventually it ended up our video ended up taking off a little bit. And there's definitely been interesting people that have reached out after that. And things are starting to pick up and end up being worth it, you know, because when you do stuff, when you add real value to the world, doing things that haven't been done before, people recognize it and there's opportunities that come with that.
So is this an altruistic goal you have, or is this a, I don't want this to come across wrong, but you could do this to say, I want to get famous. I want to be known for something. Or you could do it to say, this needs to be exposed. You could also have the combination of those things. What's most important to you to get out of all of this?
I think, you know, if somebody wanted to say that my intentions were selfish, I don't even know that that's a lie. You know, I selfishly want to stop what's going on. You know, it makes me incredibly angry. I mean, I don't know if you've ever, have you ever been down to the border and seen what's going on firsthand?
Not firsthand, no.
Okay, go down to the border. And if you see what's happening firsthand and it does not infuriate you, I believe it will. I mean, if you're an American that cares about this country, I believe it will. I started going down there about 3 years ago, like shortly after Joe Biden was put in office. And it infuriates me to see what's going on down there. There's just this invasion of our country, these Border Patrol agents who they have their hands tied and they're also just kind of going along to get along. Like, well, I need my paycheck. And they're letting in people that are, you know, potentially saboteurs, terrorists, spies, who the hell knows? So I selfishly want to stop this. You know, one day I'm going to have kids, God willing, you know, assuming nothing happens to me over the next few years. I'm going to have a family and, you know, I'm going to have to tell them, you know, hey, what did you do back when you were a young person when this stuff was going on? So I selfishly want to be able to say that, yeah, I actually took a stand. And I also selfishly want to stop this because I fear for what's going to happen in this country. I love this country. So you could certainly say that those are selfish, selfish motivation that I have to stop this, but it benefits all of us.
Yeah. You just said those words though, that are so meaningful. You love this country. And sadly, so many here have been taught to loathe this country. That's like this self-loathing, you know, we have the original sin and therefore we have to continue to punish ourselves until we're, I don't know, till we're what.
Until we're extinct, because that's where we're headed. I mean, we are headed for extinction. And by that, I mean just like freedom-loving, individualism-loving people that cherish, you know, free market and small government, where the people are the master and the government is the servant. That's going to go extinct, and we are just going to be like every other civilization that's come before us.
What about running for office? Does that interest you?
You know, I guess if you want to do that, a lot of people, they say you're not supposed to talk about it, right? But no, it does interest me very much. But I believe that if I make it in the free market first doing this type of stuff, if I build a successful business, then I'll feel I have the credentials for doing it. I don't want to be like some AOC with zero credentials, you know, just running because I think I got some good ideas and I got some people behind me. I want to do this first. You know, travel the country and parts of the world and show that I actually have firsthand understanding of these issues. And then I would like to do something like that 100% because I feel you have to be in there and affect change from within.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned AOC. When Trump was in office, she went to the border and wept and cried and claimed that people were drinking water out of toilets. I'm not sure she understood that phrase correctly. I'm not convinced, but that's what she did. But she hasn't been back. And the problem is 10 times worse than it was in the previous administration. But she isn't going now. Why do you suppose this is so political and not really focused on what's actually what the danger is from a national security interest, from a public safety perspective?
I think that there could be many potential answers to that, you know, some more sinister than others. I mean, is AOC thinking as all these people are coming in, hey, we're going to send all these people to certain congressional districts or to certain states, get more congressional seats that are likely going to be blue and basically have a slow takeover of the federal government like that? I don't know. I don't know that she's playing 3D chess like that Or is she thinking more on the lines of, hey, you know, just for political purposes, is it better if I keep my mouth shut because I don't want to, I don't want to say alienate, you're not really alienating, but I don't want to, you know, rub the wrong way my potential voter base. So I'm not really sure where she's at, but put it this way, it's all dirty politics, no matter which, no matter which answer you choose there. There's no way, unless you're a complete moron, there is no way you could look at what's going on here and consider it to be a good thing and not a national security threat. So if you're calling it anything other, or if you're keeping your mouth shut, it's treasonous. And I don't really care what the reason is, to be honest with you.
You're of a younger generation, before I let you go. It gives me some solace to know that someone, how old are you?
I'm about to be 27 this month.
I mean, that's good and young by my book. And I think there's this tendency of people to think that young people are all Democrats, they're all liberals, they're all in favor of, you know, open borders and the rest. But you love the country as it was meant to be, the country as it was designed to be. What about your generation and the people that you kind of are around all of the time, the people that you associate with of your generation? What are they seeing in the majority? Are you as much the minority as I believe you are, or am I missing something?
Perhaps in the minority as far as being willing to actually go out and take stand publicly.
Definitely, yes.
You know what I mean? I have friends that see what's going on and they're like, wow, yeah, you know, it's really horrible. It's really crazy. But they're not going to speak out publicly. And honestly, I think that that's, I guess it's a good thing to recognize what's going on and understand that it's bad. But if you're not willing to take a stand, what good is it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're a quote unquote good person who's doing nothing. And at this point, there is no time for that. In my opinion, I'm not trying to sound, I'm not trying to be like a spread fear or anything, but I mean, literally this country is on borrowed time. And so there's no time to be sitting around idly and just being like, hey, you know, that's really crazy, but you know, I don't want to say anything publicly because I'm worried what's going to happen. Nah, man, you're a coward. But I do think that people, if we're including people who recognize what's going on, but simply don't speak out, I think that that number is actually quite large. You know, for example, does anybody really think if we have a fair and honest election that Joe Biden could possibly beat Donald Trump if those are the two candidates? No. And I think that that shows exactly what I'm saying, that people are starting to wake up and they see what's going on.
You can find them at muckraker.com. Also follow them on all the various platforms, but you can start at the website if you'd like. I continue to repost their stuff. You know, I end every podcast, Anthony, by saying be brave and do good. And you've done both of those things in massive quantity and quality. And I appreciate it. And I'd love to stay in touch with you because I think your work is really important.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I'm glad we finally made this happen. And yeah, everybody just stay tuned. I mean, we're going to be releasing some serious stuff over the next few weeks/months. And yeah, just stay tuned. I'll keep you posted.
Continued success, continued travels. I know you're pursuing a lot of things, and I hope and pray that you do have a family and feel great about bringing more people into this country and into this world under hopefully much more hopeful and brighter circumstances. Again, check them out at muckrakers.com. Be brave, do good, and we will see you next time. Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you very much.
The caravan was highly organized. Leaders in the front carried a large banner and a crucifix that read, "Contención es mi muerte," containment is my death, a propaganda message implying that not allowing open borders will result in their deaths.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.